Stardate 95468.28. We are the crew of the Starship Discovery Pod. I am your reluctant captain for the mid-season finale episode, Grant Davis. And with me, as always, my first officer, Clyde Haynes.
Hello.
You like that?
Yeah.
Much like the crew of the Discovery this week, we are calling an audible and going on an improvised Skype call over the Starfleet network. So we apologize if our comms audio gets a little bit of intergalactic static. Maybe that's a little bit too nerdy. And where is the rest of our crew, you ask? Well, Mike, he took too much spore juice, Clyde. So he kind of warped out of space and time. He's a little bit gone. And Ashley... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Are we dealing with the mirror universe, Mike?
Is that what that is? Oh, man.
I think so.
I got questions for you. And Ashley, she's currently in the med bay getting treated for a serious case of the Klingons. So, Clyde, you and I are going to hold down the ship this week. And before we get into, you know, our hot takes, I wanted to say you guys can find us, you listeners can find us on our website over at StarTrekPod.com. We're also over on Facebook at Facebook.com/StarTrekPod and on Twitter at StarTrekPod. We kind of locked up all of those. And then you can help us out if you want over on iTunes. Go to iTunes Store, look up Star Trek Discovery Pod, and you know what would help us out? Give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. That gives us a little bit of a bump, makes us a little bit more visible, really helps us out, and we appreciate it. If you guys are enjoying what you're hearing, if you're not, don't tell us. But if you are enjoying it, go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod, and there you can make a per-episode pledge. Give us a dollar or two an episode, and in exchange, you get to hear us ramble on crazy theories that we will go on occasionally. In fact, one was very relevant to this episode that we did 2 weeks ago. And yeah, you go over to patreon.com. It's really easy. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Give us a buck. Give us $2. If you give us $2, we actually just offered up that you guys can join us on a private little, what's it called? Slack channel.
A Slack channel. Yes. Yeah.
We've got a few members that have donated and have joined us on there, and it's really fun getting to just chat nerdy stuff all about Star Trek.
I got to say, Grant, like the Slack channel, the private Slack channel has been a lot of fun. You get to hear people toss out question, and it's just kind of back and forth, and we're having a lot of fun on the Slack channel. So if you guys get a chance, you should join.
Yeah, definitely. Please do. And that's it for the upfront stuff. All right, so this is the mid-season finale. A bunch of crazy stuff has happened, and we got to do our thing. We got to do our hot takes. I'm going to let you take the lead here. What do you think?
All right, so I'm taking notes as I'm watching, and I don't know. I guess it was right around the time where we realized that Tyler has PTSD, mm-hmm. and I just realized, I wrote down, my heart is racing. Like, I felt like this tempo was going... And from moment to moment, I didn't want this to end. Right. Like, you know, it's the mid-season finale. And I'm just like, I need more. I need more. I need more. Like, keep going. Like, don't stop. Like, every commercial break was kind of like, please don't let this be like the last bit. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great episode. And there are a couple things that I thought were my favorite was just trying to figure out, like, who is this Lorca person that I'm looking at? Right, like he looks like he actually cares, and I'm trying to figure out, like, is this real? Is he being manipulative? And then just watching kind of Tyler just go back and forth. Is he Vok? Is he not Vok? Like, I'm looking for any clue. I thought this episode kept me on my toes the entire run. So,
yeah. For my initial impressions on this, I really enjoyed it, but there are a couple areas where I had some more nitpicky problems with certain things, but overall I was just like, wow, they're really going for it on this. They are answering a lot of, or not answering, but they're really giving a lot more evidence for some of the fan theories that people have out there. There's that whole thing they did with Stamets where I was just like, man, you guys are really messing with us here. This is not funny. You guys, are you gonna kill him? Like, early on, I was like, oh no, they're going to try and kill Stamets. And then they played on all of those, like, he's 3 days till retirement, this is my last day on the job kind of tropes that, you know, right at the end, him kissing his boyfriend, Dr. Colbert? Am I saying that right?
Colbert, yeah. Yep.
Kissing him goodbye, basically. And I was like, you dicks, you're going to kill him off. So I was grateful for how it ended that that didn't happen. And I'm super intrigued by what that twist is. But folks, you're going to have to hold off because I think we're going to discuss this episode a little bit more linearly, starting from the top.
And, all right, let's do it.
Yeah, okay. That starts off with Lorca basically getting his ass chewed out by head Starfleet Vulcan dude. What'd you think of this?
Yes. The Admiral kind of telling Lorca what he will and will not do. And it was interesting to me because you see Lorca saying, okay, all right, yes. And I'm thinking the entire time, he's given him a direct order to go to Starbase 46. And I'm thinking, there's no way, there's absolutely no way Lorca's doing that. But he's kind of playing along. And then he does the typical Star Trek captain thing where he goes, look, I know we've been given a direct order, but we're going to do what's best. And so who's with me? And I was like, wow, like that feels very much Star Trek. I was trying to figure out, is it Lorca though? But I love the way they came together and said, hey, let's do this.
See, that's interesting to me because I, you know, once again, I'm the noob to Star Trek. So I'm very unfamiliar with how things play out. But you guys gave me the impression when we first started doing this podcast that the chain of command is everything, and following orders, especially of your captain or your admiral, you always do that. But is it also common in Star Trek that you get a wily ship captain, like a maybe not so much Picard, but like Kirk, who will just defy orders?
Oh, no, that's prerequisite. Like, you can't be a ship captain in Star Trek if you obey admirals. So, yes, there is this very hardcore kind of chain of command, but it stops at the captain, right? Like, you gotta have your captain's back. You obey the captain, but you largely just kind of shrug off whatever an admiral tells you. Like, they they kind of call in and they say, you guys got to do this. We need you to do this. But you're all like, you don't know what's going on. You're not on the front lines. And so almost every Star Trek captain at some point ignores, defies, or just kind of shrugs off what the admiral. So that made sense. I was like, yeah, that's going to happen. So I was used to that. What I thought was really unique about this was the way Lorca did it and the way he covered himself. So that whole scene where he's telling Stamets, you know, run every test because, you know, we need the data trail. We need the paper trail.
Yeah.
You know, because like the one thing that this series does that the others I felt didn't was that there are these consequences. Like with Burnham, she, you know, was mutinous and is basically in prison for life. And you're always kind of waiting, like, no. And there's always this thing kind of in the background, like, when this is all over, she's going back to prison. There are consequences for these even yet heroic actions. And so here, even Lorca saying, you know what? We've got to make sure that there is a plausible reason for us not to show up. I can't just fly off the handle and be like, yeah, no, I knew this was a better idea, so I did it.
I mean, that all seems to sort of fall apart at the end, from what I could tell, when he's just basically talking to the admiral. He's like, yeah, here's what we all actually did, and, you know, give me all the accolades. So I was like, were you making a paper trail to cover yourself?
It was the paper trail in case it failed, right?
Yeah, yeah. But if it didn't...
Yeah.
When
you save the day, it's like, look what we did. Yeah, you thought you knew, but you didn't know because I'm the captain and you're an admiral and you suck.
I wonder if admirals just have to go to training to figure out how to do that whole manipulative. I'm going to say one thing just so that I can push you to do the opposite and defy me, because that's what really always works for my captains. So I thought it was interesting that Saru started pleading, like, to Lorca, saying, look.
Wait, Grant. You mean Saru?
Saru?
Saru, right? Saru. Remember?
This is right. We got Saru. A comment from someone who was Saru. Like, hey guys, love your podcast. Please stop saying his name incorrectly. Saru. Okay, Saru.
Saru.
So Saru wanted to plead his case to the Admiral as well. And, you know, that very much falls in line with Saru being the stickler for the rules. And I was kind of curious to see how he felt about Lorca actually disobeying, because he seems the most stick-in-the-mud, by-the-book kind of guy. And, you know, he gave everyone else, like, shit. Like, he gives Burnham shit every time she's a little bit defiant and he calls her such a betrayer. And to see his captain do that, I wonder if he's like, not okay with this.
Well, you got to keep in mind, this is a new Saru, right? Like, he just came off the planet Pavo, and he's had this, you know, this experience where he's very attached to the planet and to the Pavians?
Pavlovians?
Ding, 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 ding. Well, anyway, he's got this really emotional connection. So when he speaks up, I'm like, yeah, you're just still kind of off the Paru juice, right? Like you want to make sure that they're okay at any cost. But he also, while he was down there, he was mutinous, right? Like he's a little bit different. And so I could see him going, hey, wait, just give me a chance. Like I can talk to him, like logic to logic, like I can do this. And I was thinking, yeah, man, shut up, sit down.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Like Saru's like totally on that renegade defiance like team now. He's like, oh yeah, I've done a little bit of light mutiny as well. I'm with you guys.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of dirt.
Yeah.
I can get grimy. Let's go.
he broke bad. He can handle this now. So we jump over to Stamets. He's getting examined by Culber, and he got busted. Right.
Well, I mean, he didn't get busted. He was cool. It was Tilly who busted him, right?
Well, I mean, like, Culber also was like, hey, you got a bunch of crazy white matter in your brain that's like bonkers here.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, but you know, I feel fine. I'm good. Like, no big deal.
True. Tilly sold him out. What the fuck was that about?
Here's what we learned. Tilly's great. She's the comedic relief of the show, but you can't tell her any secrets. You just can't tell Tilly any secrets.
She's no vault. The thing, though, with Tilly, though, is like maybe she intentionally blabbered that just because she's like, he might die unless we have someone else medically monitoring him. So I'm going to say, even if he didn't admit it, say something. I don't know. Tilly could be smarter than she looks.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely possible. I think that she just was, it was one of those things that she was keeping it inside and she was about to burst. And at the one moment where she thought she could, like there was this relief that she could just tell, like, I don't have to keep this secret anymore. You know, she was looking for that opportunity and she did, and then realized, oh, I jumped the gun a little bit.
She's going to make a great captain one day. So one of the things I was wondering about is they have Burnham and Ash and, you know, the rest of the B team thinking up ideas while they're in this warp speed, trying to figure out how cloaking technology works. And they come up with an explanation. And I was just thinking, even now in the 21st century, we have pretty good ideas of how something like that might work. I would think they would definitely know and be able to just kind of pull up different theories and figure out which one they were able to crack rather than like positing ideas. Maybe this is nitpicky of me.
No, see, the thing is that, and this is where it gets interesting for me, is when we watch the other series, in particular, The Next Generation, the cloak is still a surprise. Like when a Klingon battle, you know, bird of prey uncloaks, it's always like, whoa, we didn't see that coming. And so the Star Trek or Starfleet having the ability to detect or see through a cloaked ship is not something that they have in the future. So the fact they were able to do it in this, you know, in this episode, mm-hmm. I was honestly shocked by it. Like I wrote down in my notes, man, that's got to be a little bit disappointing because they're going to spend 3 hours trying to figure out this thing that they're never going to figure out because no one else has. And this is what they did. I was like, oh, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, once they kind of pull that twist, you're like, ah, that's how they get away with having the intel, but never actually being able to give it over to the Federation, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so jumping back to the whole Stamets thing. I mean, they were laying it on pretty thick that he might die here. What were your thoughts on this?
I thought he was gone. Like, I was... When Lorca said, you know, we need like 130-something jumps, I was thinking, there's no way.
Right?
Like, there is no way. I was thinking, well, they're going to get about like 70, 85, and he's just going to die. Like, and then they're going to be stuck kind of nose to nose with this, you know, ship of the dead, and it's going to be on.
Yeah. Once again, it keeps falling to this point of like, why isn't anyone else able to do this? Why did they not give us an explanation of why it's only Stamets who knows how to plug into the spore drive and jump? I don't get it.
Right. I don't either. And so what I remember from the episode was they had the, you know, the spore, kind of the tardigrade DNA. And I thought they were trying to synthesize it, and then he injected himself with it. And so I was thinking, well, can't they just inject somebody else with it and then have, like, a crew, like a whole team of these people?
Yeah.
I don't understand why it's just Stamets. Like, at no point did they tell us that, well, it's only compatible with Stamets' DNA. Like, I don't know if he took the only source and injected him with it, but I would imagine that it's still in the computer and they can, you know, duplicate some more. It just seems kind of a little reckless.
Or throw us some sort of silly line where it's like, you know, we want to test this on other people, but we're just constantly in battle and we never have a point where we can run the risk of testing other people to see if they're able to handle the same thing. And we know he can. I don't know. Give me some line like that. And I'll be like, shrug my shoulders. Okay. The part where Lorca is putting the hard sell on Stamets, where he's like, Stamets, you know what? I know that you have this in you to make this 133 jumps because you are an explorer. You joined up on to go in a ship just so that you could do something like this. You could have chosen to stay in a lab. And once he said that, that kind of threw me for a loop because weren't we told in the first couple episodes that Stamets didn't like willingly jump onto Discovery? He was basically conscripted against his will.
Right. Right. And even more than that, it's a line that Lorca uses in there where he says, you know, you want to go where no man has gone before. And I was like, that's a little bit thick. Like you came on a little bit too strong, buddy.
Was it when he turned to the camera and winked?
Right. Like, no. Pretty much. You know, it just, I'm looking at him and I'm going, who is this guy? Right. Like, I'm trying to figure out who he is, because what he's talking about, the things that he's saying, is very much Star Trek. Like, he's appealing to what we know to be at the core of Starfleet. And of every series we've seen from here on out, kind of follows that. You know, explorers who are looking, it's not about wartime. Like, this is what we have to do. We're going to see things that no one has seen before. We're going to experience things. We're going to make contact. Like, that was like, that's everything. But coming from a guy who's a wartime consigliere, right? Like, this is a wartime guy. Like, this guy is only there because he's a stone cold killer.
Yeah.
To hear him say it was a little bit like, what?
Who do you think you are? You're not an explorer. You're a fighter.
I mean, he's he's turning into the Star Trek captain that we all expect of a Star Trek captain. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really feel like that fits this guy who has this menagerie with all this stuff in it, right?
Yeah. But once again, when we look back at Stamets, we see this guy has been called on repeatedly to kind of step up and sacrifice himself, and he keeps doing it, which is impressive. That it's him and Burnham once again is just always ready to throw her life on the line. But I don't know, props to the science guy that he keeps doing it as well. I was pretty touched by the moments where he was like, reticent but willing to step in to action. I think that sells always better in the story to me than when like Burnham, who's just like a little bit too eager to always jump into the action.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you know, it's this hero, the reluctant hero, right? Like, I'm going to do this for the greater good, mm-hmm. but I know that it's dangerous and I'd prefer not to do it. But if not me, then who? Like, that is easy to connect to when you've got Burnham who's like, you know, I've got to do this. It's different from that hero's journey because, like, we know that Burnham has her own, I don't know, demons to conquer and vanquish. And so her going back to the ship, I think there's a logical component, like the whole Vulcan logic, like, look, I am the best person for the job. Like, I'm the only one who's been on this ship before. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, you've been on the bridge for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you, and it was a while ago. A lot has happened since then. I don't know how much you remember. But also, she's looking and going, hey, like, I was here. And the last time, things got way off the rails. Like, this is my redemption. This is my moment of redemption. And so typically when we see that, that's prelude to kind of an epic failure because you're in it for the wrong reasons. But it seemed to work out in this case.
Yeah. She's like, look, logically I should go, but I also thirst for revenge. Lorca right. should have been like, yeah, last time you did it, things didn't go too great. Maybe you aren't the person who's really good at doing that. Burnham.
I guess the thing that I couldn't understand was why it was only two of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Maybe they only had two of those little doohickeys that mask their life or whatever.
Maybe. But man. I was thinking, like, in a situation like this, you always bring a red shirt. Like, you gotta bring a red shirt. If you don't bring a red shirt, then guess what? You're the red shirt.
bring someone to die just so that you guys are okay. Yeah, they had some really heavy-handed dialogue lines. Like, when they have those little life sign things they're putting on their chest, and then as soon as they, like, blast onto the ship, Burnham and Ash, that is, and she mm-hmm. goes, our life signs are masked as Klingon to Ash. I was like, come on, dude. You're like, you already explained that. You don't have to explain it to us, the audience. We get it.
No. Help me understand this. You are covertly sneaking onto an aggressive, warring, like, people group's ship, mm-hmm. right? This is all about stealthiness, right?
Right.
Yet when you take out these devices... these beacons, these large beacons.
Yes, dude, I have the same problem.
Okay, you turn them on, they light way the hell up, yeah. and then start talking.
Uplink to discovery established. You're like, shut the fuck up.
Right? I'm like, can't you just, like, blink green or something?
Yeah, why don't you just, like, have your cell phone go off while you're sneaking around the ship?
Exactly. That is what I thought it was. I was like, no one's going to hear that. You know, I did have some, there are these moments, like when you see the weapons fire go off, when they're in kind of that area with the Admiral and Laurel, I was thinking, yeah, any starship worth its, you know, weight in salt is gonna go, I detect weapon fire in this area. Mm-hmm. Dispatch a security team to see what the hell is going on. And so there were a couple moments where I was like, all right, I'll have to, you know, I'm just going to let it go. But the beacon talking to you, I thought was like, no, there's no way.
No, that was...
I didn't need to know that. I, like, turn green, like, go from red to green, and I'm like, good, I got it.
Yeah, that was definitely a bridge too far. That, and, okay, this is... Your complaint was valid. In fact, very good. Mine here, this is stupid, but it really bugged me when the warp ship... Oh, the Discovery... First off, it warped out of doing a hyperspeed or a warp speed. It did the jump, and I thought that was pretty cool. But then we see from the Klingon perspective that the ship is facing upwards and facing directly at them, even though they're cloaked. It just seemed kind of like, oh, of course, there's always an up in space in Star Trek somehow. And, of course, they're facing them just because... Like, in the graphics department, I guess that looks the best. But it wouldn't have made sense. They should have been facing like a different direction, like sideways or sort of upside down or something.
See, I hear what you're saying. Like, yes, you're right. Like the visual, that face-to-face visual, like that's what you want. Like for a TV show, it's the, you know, that is the product placement can face just so slightly so you can read the label.
Yeah.
But if it were me and I saw that, if I was Cole, I'd be like, you know, just let's move over about 180 degrees, because if we do have to start firing, I don't want to fire at the front where their shields are the best. Let me get that side view.
Right? Yeah.
Like I'm cloaked. They don't know where I'm at.
Let's uncloak while their cannons are facing directly at us, guys. No, that makes no sense. Anyway,
I want to hit them where they're tender, like right in the neck.
I mean, minor complaint there, but it was a little bit frustrating to me. So they're running around, they're dropping off these beacons, which very much reminds me of last season of Silicon Valley, where they're running around that festival, setting off
right.
secret beacons.
Yep.
And Burnham gets a bug up her ass. She notices there's a human life sign, and she's like, even though the fate of our entire crew, the fate of the entire galaxy, everything is on the line, I'm going to be really dumb and irresponsible and deviate from our mission to go and try and figure out what life this is. She has no idea if it's a good human or not. None of that made sense, and I was like, why would they do that? I get it for narrative purposes, but...
Yes, so you're making a great point. I didn't think it could be somebody else because we knew who it was. But to your point, it could have been Mud. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it could have been
what if it was Mud?
It could have been a bad guy. It could have been
right.
It could have been Ash once he's been transported out of a Vok body. Whatever.
Right. But you're right, and I was sitting there thinking, my whole time was like, why the bridge? Like, you've got to put this thing on the bridge? Like, that's a one-way trip.
Yeah.
You're not coming back from that. And so, yes, to deviate. While I struggle with it at first, I realize that on a deeper sense, Burnham's dealing with, the last time I was here, I came back, and Giorgio didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I've got to get everybody. Like, this was her own redemption. Like, you know, I think we see it at the end when you look at her face. It was just so important for her to look. She may never be given an official Starfleet rank, but what she had to do is be redeemed in her own eyes. And she was able to kind of bring Giorgio's, you know, her Star Trek pin, the Starfleet like locator symbol, the emblem. She was able to bring that home, which is kind of like dog tags, right? Like, she was able to bring the dog tags home. She got the Admiral back, you know, she got Tyler back. She was able to bring him back. Like, she brought everybody home. So for her, it was like a do-over. Like, this time we're gonna go back to the same place and we're gonna win. And so yeah, I got it for where they were trying to help us understand where Burnham was going, but it seemed like a bad idea. Like, I was just like, nah.
Yeah. You're lucky that paid off, Burnham.
Right, right.
But otherwise, that would have been like, fool me twice, I would think. Like, you just keep making the same mistake.
If Mud was behind the door and he was like, yo, yeah. Burnham's here. Like,
I mean, that would be like, such a great trick to us, to the audience, because we were expecting the Admiral as well. Having watched up to this point, be like, oh, shit. But yeah, I mean, sure, that, you know, she's able to save the day. I guess that's pretty good. And from, you know, story perspective, being able to get to that point in the mid-season finale is pretty great.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing about the mid-season finale is, you know, I'm watching this and I'm a little bit in disbelief because it wasn't so much a trick or a twist, but I'm expecting this war to go on for seasons, right? Like, the whole point of the show is that they're at war with the Klingons. At least that's what I'm thinking. And so as I'm seeing these events unfold, I'm seeing her fight with Cole, which was fascinating. I didn't think she stood a chance.
That was a pretty good fight scene.
It was actually a good fight scene.
It was like choreographed and like, you know, back far back steady shot so we could actually see how they're moving against each other.
Right. And then when she jumped off and got the transporter, my first initial thought was, oh, this is going to be kind of corny. And then I was like, no, it's actually kind of cool. Like, I kind of dig it.
It was really cool.
and so I'm watching this and I'm expecting something to happen. Like, I'm expecting them to get away and the ship blows up and I'm stunned for a second. Mm-hmm. And I write down in my notebook, I'm like, Cole is dead. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Like, I was having a hard time processing it. And it was like this moment I was thinking, is this the first moment of relief I've had since the pilot? Like, are we allowed to take a break? Like, this is going to be interesting. And I realized that this has been pretty much a nonstop journey since the kickoff, you know?
Yeah. To see where they are pushing this story and how quickly they were kind of pushing through the narrative. It does seem, we'll get into it in a minute, like what that ending might imply. But if they're going in such a direction, it seems like they did a lot of setup for almost like a bit of a bait and switch for us, the audience. And that's cool. But I was like, huh, okay. I was invested in that, but I'm definitely invested in where else this could be going.
Well, I think it'll be interesting. I'm excited to see what happens in this next episode because I'm trying to figure out, am I watching Star Trek or am I about to start watching Sliders all over again?
Right. Okay. Before we get to that, though, okay, let's talk a little bit more about Ash. So we see Ash confront Laurel. And yeah, he goes through some hardcore PTSD and just starts flipping out. And this is a guy who seems cool as a cucumber, like walking around and fighting everyone. And he can handle so many other situations. He seems smooth with Burnham when he's macking on her. And he even knows how to hack Klingon doors and make them slide open. But, you know, he drops down. He's out of commission. And we start seeing these flashbacks. And despite what he later tells Burnham about what he was having a problem with was his sexual relationship with Laurel, we see that he was seeing some gruesome, like, surgical either torture or surgical manipulation to, like, facial reconstruction, stuff like that. And the implications there, Clyde, what do you think?
So this was an interesting point for me because, again, going back to my notebook, I wrote maybe three times, Ash is Vok. Ash isn't Vok. Ash is Vok. I don't know who the hell Ash is. So there are these moments like when he sliced open the Klingon, like, I know, you know, I've spent some time in a Klingon prisoner. I can do this. I was like, you can do this because you're Vok.
Right? That's what I was thinking.
Like, I was like, yeah, okay, yeah. Like, she's looking at him like, how do you know how to do this? I'm like, because he's a Klingon. And then when he freaks out when he sees Laurel, I'm like, well, maybe he's not. And so I don't know what to think. I think there's some things here that are really interesting. And I heard them talk about this on the after show, was that we almost never on television as a whole see a male sexual assault victim.
Uh-huh.
Like almost never. And we see that here. And I'm trying to understand. I'll tell you what I'm trying to grasp. Is it real or is it part of the facade? So did this really happen to him? Was he tortured and cut and sexually assaulted and this whole twisted dilemma? Or was he moved from Vok to Ash and then these things done to him so that he almost wouldn't even know who he was?
Yeah.
So it'd be real.
Put into, like, if somehow Vok lives within Ash's body through some sort of twisted torture and like medical tomfoolery, I don't know. I'm mixed on how that is being presented to us because, yeah, either somehow they want him to feel the pain of that, right? And I would imagine if it was Vok, they would have used anesthetic. They would have made it a, they would have trained him and made it a painless thing. But if somehow Ash is a sleeper cell and Vok is living inside of him and there's a Klingon element that might awaken in him, even if it isn't Vok, although so many signs point to it being Vok, the sexual relationship,
yeah,
especially.
It makes me wonder if they're trying to throw us. But that line by Laurel, like I was good. Like I literally had come to terms with, okay, Ash has got some issues, but he's not a Klingon sleeper agent. And then Laurel's like, I won't let them hurt you. And I'm like, what the, like, now I don't know again.
Yeah, it seems like he might even starting to remember some elements if he's going over to her in that capacity. And he was like wanting to like start a conversation. It was like, oh no, some of this might be unlocking for him. And maybe the Klingon way is that this had to be a trial through pain for him to kind of make this transition or something. I don't know. Or maybe it's all a red herring from the writers and this really was just torture and abuse of him, sexual and physical, just torture and abuse.
We'll get in some theories later, but I think that this is the big reveal that we're all waiting for this show.
Yeah. We also see some naked Klingon alien in that sex scene, which
I know Mike was waiting for this, so it's I feel so bad that he's not able to make it on this podcast.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Because this is what he's been waiting for, like, all season.
Yeah, I talked to him just before we were recording, and he said he was not able to finish the episode yet. And so I was like, oh, he hasn't even seen that scene yet. He doesn't know what he's in for. But, yeah, I saw that, and I was like, this is another one of those things. They're able to drop F-bombs in the episodes, and they're able to have not necessarily naked human scenes, but they can have a prosthetic naked alien, I guess.
See, and I think they could have done this on CBS. So here's a question I have for you, Grant.
Yeah.
Have you met anyone who doesn't like this show?
I know some people, but I haven't like talked to them extensively about why they don't like it. In fact, I was talking to Mike about maybe we should have someone on who just vehemently does not like this show because it'd be fascinating to talk to. But I know that Mike is a little bit reticent because he doesn't want us to just examine like negative discussion of the show from someone who just doesn't like it. Like unless there's something, you know, a little bit more rewarding about it, and I get that point. But yeah, I don't know. I don't get why anyone wouldn't like this show.
Right. It seems to me that most people really like this show. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, I keep asking myself, I get what CBS is trying to do and they're trying to drive traffic to the CBS All Access. And when this show wraps up in like April or May, they're going to have a ton of new signups. I mean, most of them will be free trials that end shortly after they binge the show. But I can see what they're doing. I just think they may have missed an opportunity to have a monster on broadcast television.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this show is incredible, and it could be a complete water cooler talk show if they were to have this a little bit more accessible. And I mean, even tonight I was watching and having a ton of problems being able to watch it on All Access.
Yeah, I think this was lost. I think this show was gonna have that type of like if
the
on broadcast. Yeah, I think people were gonna like everybody was gonna be watching this. Whether you were a sci-fi fan or not, this is what everybody was gonna be talking about. Like it feels that, at least to me, but I'm a Trekkie, it feels that good. And so I just look back and go, I get what they're doing. It's a great business decision if it pays off. And eventually, if they keep making these great episodes, you know, and people like us are talking about it, there are people who are going to jump on board.
Yeah.
But right now, this could be the thing. Like, I, you know, we have podcasts. We do TV podcasts. I don't know that there's anything else on TV right now that I think is better than this.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be kind of hard-pressed to name something else right now that...
Yeah.
Like, I'm in love with A Good Place, but that's a different element.
It's different. Like. It's different.
Yeah.
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 I love The Good Place, too, but, I mean, so I just look at this and I'm like, man, this is a monster. Like, this is a TV monster.
And it's in a time slot right now. It's not competing against something like Game of Thrones that is going to be the talk of the week. This could be the complete talk of the week. Why are they hiding it behind All Access? Maybe you're right. Could be a big mistake on their part. But they are also desperate to move to the digital, so I kind of get it.
I get it. Like I said, I think it makes great business sense. I think it makes great businesses. I think as a TV and from an advertising standpoint, you've got the thing that people are watching when Game of Thrones isn't on. Like, but you got it.
CBS were the chumps that wouldn't get on the Hulu train, so it's also kind of on them, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is their move, and like I said, I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I ran into a guy at work with this killer Star Trek hoodie, right? And if you're into the Apple, the MacBook decals, right? Like, I got a pretty cool one on mine, but this guy has the Starship Enterprise on it, like, as a decal. And I'm like, this guy, like, so I ask him, I'm saying, hey, you know, are you into Discovery? Have you watched it? And he's like, no, I'm waiting till the season ends and then I'm going to do it. And I'm like, so this is a guy who is, like, he is Trek all day, every day.
Yeah.
And
they weren't able to get his business.
They couldn't get him.
Man.
So, anyway.
All right, well, two more things I wanted to cover. Stamets, at the end, he goes through the spore machine and he's going 133 jumps and starting to go kind of crazy. And he says a line. He says, there's a clearing in the forest. That's how they go. I was curious if you might have any thoughts of what that might mean, or is it just supposed to be kind of gibberish?
No, I think the writers are kind of going back to a longer quote that I don't remember right now, but I think it talks about this redemption, right? I think it talks about kind of, and you know, the title of this episode is Into the Forest We Go, or Into the Forest I Go. So I think it's kind of referencing this longer quote, but in terms of what it means in the actual plot of the story, I think it's a little bit, I would say a little bit gibberish, but also a flag that tells us he is seeing things on a multidimensional level and he's never going to be the same again.
Mm-hmm.
So buckle up. Like, I think that was kind of a very subtle warning. Like, hey, don't take a nap. Don't go to the fridge. Like, there's a lot more about to come in the next few minutes.
I mean, when he started babbling like that, I was like, this is how he's going to die. But then when all of a sudden it was like they completed the jumps and they went to the Lorca scene and then they went to the Burnham scene and then they went, like, they teased out so many other character scenes and we weren't seeing Stamets. I was like, oh, they didn't kill him yet. Or they're waiting till the very end to do it. And that's when we get the scene where he and Culber are going back to the machine because he's going to make one last jump. And it's very heavy-handed. You know, we get two kisses in this show. We get the kiss between him and Culber, which is like a nice romantic one. We get the one between Burnham and Ash, which seems a little bit duplicitous, a little bit... I mean, there's her opening up, but it seems like he's being a little bit evasive with what he's telling her.
Agreed.
And the Stamets and Culber kiss, much better. Much. I didn't feel as like, oh, there's something like manipulative going on here with these characters. And I was like, but there's something manipulative going on with the writers because they're really trying to make me think he's going to die. Are they going to kill him? And so it was nice that they do that crazy jump and he doesn't die.
Right. Yeah. So I have a saying when I'm watching TV and I think one character like, oh, he's about to die or all hope is lost. I usually say that's game, coach. Like, it's just, that's it. Like, that's it. But, you know, put your warm-ups on, get ready for the bus. Like, that's it. It's over. Like, there's nothing else. And I remember looking when he's like, yeah, just one last jump. And then that's it. You're going to have to find something else. And then you've got this big kiss, which is clearly a goodbye kiss.
Right.
I'm like, that's game, coach. Like, he's not coming back. And so I was not surprised when something went wrong on this one last jump. I thought he was going to die. Like, I thought, oh, he's dead. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. Like, you know, because we're big Anthony Rapp fans on this show. And I thought he did a great job in this episode. Oh, but yeah. I was like, it can't kill him. But I think he's gone. And I think so blinding him and making him unable to be this spore drive and yet this catalyst for so many other things to come is a great way to almost kill off the Stamets that we've come to love, but keep him in the show, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he's clearly evolving into something else. And, you know, I feel like with whatever was going on with his brain with all the white matter, this was somewhat of an inevitability, but that last jump just kind of pushed things over the line. And, you know, his eyes are going white. I'm not sure if that's blindness or if that's some sort of new ultra all-seeing. He doesn't need the use of eyes because he can perceive through other unknown perception, whatever elements, other senses that he's now gained from jumping everywhere. But I don't know, like when I saw that scene, I was also thinking, was it one jump too many for him that caused him to kind of lose it and lose their direction and wherever he jumped them to? Or was it that Lorca potentially, you know, you started this episode saying that Lorca's being like a really good stand-up dude and like being kind to everyone. But did you maybe get the sense that Lorca heard him say he wasn't going to do any more jumps, so Lorca took the initiative to do something that manipulated the machine with how they were jumping?
So I'll say that, no, I did not think that.
Okay.
You might be onto something. I assumed at the time that it was something related to something kind of else. I mean, but we've talked about this. Lorca is manipulative. Like, you have to expect that he has his own agenda. I mean, he tried to get Admiral Cornwell killed.
Yeah, I mean, when he didn't try to get her killed, but he basically sold her out for whatever was his ultimate agenda, right?
No, he knew she was not, or he assumed that she was not coming back from that, yeah. Right? Did you see the look on his face when she showed up? Uh-huh. He was like, and talking to the Admiral, he's all like, that's all she said? Like, she's in surgery? He wanted to so badly go, did she say anything? Did she ask about me? Did she talk about me? Like, well, what'd she say? What'd she say? You got to tell me what she said.
No. Everything's cool, right? She could be crazy. She might be lying about stuff, you know?
You don't believe, like, she's been through a traumatic experience. You can't believe anything she said. Oh, she wants to give me an award? Well, cool then. She say anything else?
there's both him having to go back to whatever space station they were supposed to be warping to. He was having to go back and face Cornwell after having kind of sold her out, and her also saying that she was going to take away his ship because of his PTSD. But in addition, the other admiral was certainly commending Lorca for all that he was able to do to kind of save the day and all that technology. But I got the sense that he was like, come back here and we'll discuss other things. Just make sure you come back here. And I'm sure,
right?
Lorca saw the writing on the wall that, like, if he goes back there, he's losing his ship. So that also leads me to believe that he's like, hey, buddy, Stamets, can you just make one more jump for us? That sure would be swell if you could just do one more jump. And then he plugged in some crazy coordinates because he's obviously been tracking every jump and like looking at his own data for it. Like, he's really tuned into like the potential of that. So sure, he could have manipulated that. And I guess that brings us to what happened. Where are they?
So let me say, Grant, I love what you're saying here. That's not something that I was thinking of early on, but you're hitting on the question of, did he do it on purpose? Like, was it an accident, a fortuitous accident where he doesn't have to, they don't have to deal with this anymore, right? Like, he won't have to deal with, or at least what I think, he won't have to deal with Admiral Cornwell and, or being a completely disobeying the Vulcan Admiral. Like, he's done some stuff.
Lorca ain't gonna lose his ship.
No, he's a hero. But the question comes down to, did he do it on purpose or was it just a fortuitous accident? That's a great question. Now, where do I think they are? I think they're in another universe. Like, I think they're in another timeline, which I think is incredible because I think Giorgio is back.
What? Okay, that would be pretty amazing.
I mean, think about it. Come on. You've got Michelle Yeoh, right?
Are we going to see Chris Pine here?
I don't know about that. But think about it. Are you really going to have Michelle Yeoh just in the pilot episode and not use her? She's way too talented for that, and you have her.
Dude, okay. Okay, let's think of the ramifications there. If Georgia's back and they're not at war with the Klingons, then Burnham is no longer... on the outs. They've just warped into somewhere else where they have incredible technology, and now they also have a guy on their ship, Ash, who potentially is a Manchurian candidate Klingon who might be a sleeper cell hostile agent on their ship, as well as the love interest slash manipulator Laurel, who did all that, like all of this. And then Stamets, who might be this kind of all-seeing new kind of species now that he's like ascended into some sort of like trans-dimensional being. I don't know what's going on with him.
Yeah, I mean, if Giorgio's back, then T'Kavma could be back. Like, I think they it's interesting that it looks like when you look at this finale is almost, rather than saying mid-season finale, what they've called it is the finale for chapter one. Yeah. And it's almost as though they've hit the reset button and we're going to get a bit of a new premise, right? And so at least that's my theory, is I'm thinking we're about to see some people who we were thinking, wow, I didn't think I was going to see them again. They were gone too soon.
Would this be the mirror universe?
I think it's quite possible.
So the mirror universe, they're just like a little bit more extreme versions of themselves, or it's just a different version of themselves?
It's a different version of themselves.
Okay.
Typically when we do a mirror, when you see a mirror universe episode, the traditional trope is to go dark. Like, you get the dark version. Mm-hmm. You get the what if I was a complete jerk version of yourself?
Yeah.
But from a theoretical standpoint, it's just a different version. The idea is that in any timeline, there are infinite versions of yourself and infinite kind of permutations of little bitty decisions. If you turn left down the corridor instead of turn right, what butterfly effect would that have? And so I'm guessing my theory is that they're in kind of one of these kind of mirror universes where something else is off. And what we know is that they see a bunch of wreckage. So they're not quite sure where they are. Something is different.
Yeah.
What is what they won't tell us until January.
See, the thing I was thinking is that the Spore Drive, it's a means of being able to jump instantaneously through space and time. And thus far, what we've seen was it being able to jump through space instantaneously. And there's certainly a time element that allows that. But when Lorca's pulling up his data and talking about the possibilities of it, the impression I got wasn't necessarily a multi-universe sliders kind of thing or mirror universe kind of thing, if it's like a fringe sort of A and B world or whatever. But more that they were jumping in time, either ahead or back in time. And so I thought maybe they were jumping ahead in time because he was able to be like, hey, instead of the numbers saying jump to this coordinate in space, jump to this time in space. And so they were able to jump ahead. That was just a guess I had. And I was like, if they're no longer, because if they have that data and they are never actually supposed to give it to Starfleet, if they jump ahead in time to where it's kind of irrelevant that they have that, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I wrote down when he said, "Where are we?" I was thinking, "When are you?" is also a question that you should ask.
Charlie should say.
So, yeah. So I'm with you. Like, it's absolute possibility. I mean, I think the beauty of the way they've crafted this episode is we have more questions now. Like, it's you don't know what's going on. You just have little bitty fragments. Like I said earlier, what I don't want is like, and please hear me. I love the sliders.
Yeah, yeah.
However, what I don't want,
week-to-week jump thing.
Yeah,
I'm sure I don't want. That.
Yeah, but I don't want this. I don't want a half season or a season where, you know, kind of much like Voyager, the quest is just to get home.
But what if we were to zoom out from all that wreckage and all of a sudden we see the, and bear with me because I'm not familiar with the show, but the space station from Deep Space Nine all of a sudden in the background? Wouldn't that have been kind of crazy?
Well, that's what Mike wants, right? Like, that's what Mike wants. He wants the anthology series where you kind of move, you know, across time and you know, around Deep Space Nine or around the kind of TNG or Voyager or things like that. I'm not willing to say that that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, but it would be interesting. I'm not going to say it wouldn't be interesting to kind of bring in some updated characters and kind of play with that a little bit. I think it's too soon for that, personally. I am expecting this because I think the one thing that we don't know, and I'm making some assumptions based on kind of observing CBS, is that this doesn't seem like it's one of those we're coming in to tell a very specific story. You know, we've got three seasons of materials, and when we're done, we're out.
Yeah.
Right. CBS likes to put a show on for as long as it can stay on. Right. Like you'll look up and that thing will have 12, 13 seasons.
Clyde, I mean, we're going to be doing this podcast for a long time, man. I hope you're ready.
I mean, yeah, I have no other choice. I mean,
we're going to grow old together on this podcast.
And we'll spin off other podcasts for their other shows.
We'll go boldly to other ones where we're talking about Rick and Morty or something.
It'll be nice. We'll be in a retirement home just with some podcast equipment.
Just babbling into microphones that are plugged into nothing. I think that's a good place where we can wrap up this episode and wrap up our mid-season, I guess. Our first chapter one. Is that what we call it? Chapter one or book one?
Chapter one.
So I guess for the listening audience, we should say that we are going to be taking a hiatus through the break. So I don't anticipate that we're going to be releasing weekly episodes when the show's off. We'll be back when the show is back. But you guys,
January 7th.
But you guys can still stay tuned because we might, if there's stories here or there, we might pop back on to discuss something, but nothing on a regular basis. And this has been a lot of fun. This first half of this is my first exposure really to the Star Trek universe, and I'm guessing this is not necessarily the Star Trek a lot of other people are familiar with, especially that I've missed the original series and Next Generation. But I am loving the one that is my first Star Trek so far. What are your thoughts?
I mean, this is great. It's different, but you know, and when people ask me, you know, what's it like? I say it's closer to Deep Space Nine. So if you like that, it's got more of a long form story arc than the, you know, episode of the week. I think it's from a concept standpoint and a richness, it's closer to something like Battlestar Galactica than what you're used to in Star Trek. So these are things that I've said in the show. So I like this. It's different, but I really do like what they're doing. And it's, you know, I'm excited to see this story unfold from a week to week. Grant, I want to know,
Okay.
Having experienced this, right? One, are you more inclined to watch future Star Trek series? And are you interested now in going back, having kind of been introduced to Star Trek, and going back and watching something like The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or Voyager or even Enterprise, which I've got a friend who's trying to convince me that Enterprise is a great show and has given me like 4 or 5 episodes to watch to prove that. Are you interested in kind of going back and watching some episodes? And
those are two great questions, especially because you allowed me to have two of them. First off, future stuff, based on this, yes, absolutely. But going into the past, I feel like those are going to reflect their time period, and I'm not really that interested in the episodic kind of shows and shows that wanted to tell a story over 22 episodes or over multiple seasons. That I mean, it's a lot to kind of invest in, especially when we're in such an era of peak TV, and I do other TV podcasts where I'm talking about so many other shows I'm trying to watch weekly. I'm not really interested in taking the time to invest in watching and going back and watching those, but I don't know. I could be convinced, I suppose.
No, I mean, that's fair, because you're right. 22 episodes over like 7 seasons. And look, I love The Next Generation, but it's a lot of episodes. And honestly, and I hate to say this, but I think it's hard to write 22 episodes, 22 hour long episodes a year. Like, they're not all going to be golden, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah.
So I respect that. I respect you wanting to kind of go forward. And you're right. There's a lot of good TV out there right now.
All right. Well, where can people find you, Clyde?
Easy. You can find me on Twitter at Clyde Haynes. You can also find me at Key and Clyde. That's KEINClyde.com, where you can kind of check out all of our podcasts. And as like everybody else, you can find me at Permanent Record.
Yep. I'm Grant Davis. You can find me at Baron Von Grant over on Twitter. I have a Facebook page called the Grant Davis page. You can follow that as well. I do this podcast. I do another TV podcast called The TV Dudes, which you can go to thetvdudes.com. And I do a beer podcast every Monday, which is The Beerists, and that's at thebeerists.com. And our people who aren't on mic, and we're missing them, our fearless leader, Mike Moody. You can find him at Mike Moody. And Ashley Moreno, who you can find at Squiddy on Twitter, SQWIDY, I believe. Go
and
follow
Instagram.
Them. Oh, yeah.
You can follow her IG account.
Go follow them, guys. And if you guys want to chat with us, especially during the off season, once again, go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Make that $2 an episode pledge. And we would love to come chat with you guys on our Slack channel about all things Star Trek. This has been a lot of fun. Live long and prosper.